Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayer. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review. This is Weekly Comics Spotlight number 608 for comics originally released on April 3rd, 2019. Now, starting us off in DC is Justice League number 21. This is part 3 of the ongoing storyline that's continuing with a possible future Justice League or future of the Justice League or whatever.
Correct.
I've been finding this story it's kind of interesting. I mean, the whole potential future status quo and future state of the Justice League is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But there are things Scott Snyder is doing here that are what I would put is kind of quote-unquote big things.
Yeah.
Almost kind of sort of event-ish, but not quite.
That's why I was like, I don't remember reading any solicits for an event, but it feels just like it's so building up to some big event.
But whether it's building up to an event or not, it's certainly epic in scope and whatnot. And in a way that feels a little weird, because
yeah.
This whole thing with the World Forager, who's apparently the brother of the Monitor and Anti-Monitor.
Yeah.
Those are characters from Crisis on Infinite Earths. They're big dudes.
And this, is he a new character? Because I'm assuming he is.
I'm thinking he's new with the storyline, although I can't swear to that.
So we have a new huge character coming into the DCU.
Yeah. And huge on like a cosmic level, you know, sort of a thing.
Yeah.
And it's not a bad concept, but linking him with the Monitor and Anti-Monitor sort of sets expectations in my mind.
Yes. I was wondering what your take was going to be on that, because, yeah, for someone that powerful to come in, something big has to happen, and they keep on mentioning previous crises that have happened.
Well, and the whole thing of wanting to replace this multiverse with another one. I mean, I'd be kind of okay with it because maybe they'd get to a multiverse I like better.
You're not happy with the current multiverse.
I am not. It seems like an odd thing to do when there are kind of multiple events either going on or having just happened or about to happen right now. I mean, now, we've got Doomsday Clock, Heroes in Crisis, and the upcoming event Leviathan thing.
Yeah, and now, add on top of it, this, I don't know what it is, just a big Justice League story.
And I expect the Justice League stories to have a certain amount of big dealness to them, because it's the Justice League.
Of course.
But there's an aspect of almost competing with the other world-changing events, particularly with the presumably Doomsday Clock, less so with Heroes in Crisis and Event Leviathan once that kicks in.
Yeah. See, I don't know if it's his writing style or what he's throwing in here, but it keeps feeling like the stakes keep getting raised higher and higher and higher, and it's like something's got to happen. And that was the thing that when we started reading this and reviewing it early on, Justice League, I was like, it feels like they're headed for a reboot or something massive.
Something. And we've come back to this title a couple of times, and I think it's a good call to do that because of the scope and the epicness of what's going on.
Yeah, and his title, I don't know if he has liked this in the past, because, you know, I don't have a lot of books I've read by Scott Snyder. I've read some of his stuff, but not a ton of it. But I know his writing now in Justice League is very difficult. You have to pay attention, because he puts so much stuff in there that if you're not paying attention, you'll miss things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't know if he was like that with Batman, but so I'd say he's a difficult writer. He's not very accessible. He's not somebody you want to jump in the middle of the arc or the kickoff of a new storyline. You have to read from issue one and be up to speed with that, or you're going to be confused.
I think a lot of writers are kind of, they have that expectation. I don't know that they should.
Yeah. It was Perseus was messaging me on the forums or on the Slack channel, and he was asking me when Dan Abnett took over on Justice League Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
He was like, "Hey, I read this, and what do you think? And I read it. I was like, oh, this is really cool because it's completely tying into Snyder stuff. And he's like, oh, I haven't read any of that. And that's why he was confused. So he went back and he had to read all the Justice League stuff. And then he's like, okay, now it's a cool story.
Yeah, when you've kind of got to do your homework like that, I've got mixed feelings on it. Because if you haven't read the whole story, you haven't read the whole story.
Yeah.
But if you've got to be reading, you know, all the different titles to even know what's going on or to understand the story, that's not good either.
Yeah, and also another thing that's kind of weird for me, you know, sorry, I'm going off on tangents. We haven't even really discussed the story. But I noticed that he comes out with big ideas. So, mm-hmm. you know, the first thing he did was all these new forces. You know, you had the Speed Force, the Sage Force, you have the Still Force, and whatever other forces, you know, Strong Force. I can't remember what it's called. But it seems like the only person who has any play with that is the Flash writer, Williamson.
Yeah.
Nobody else mentions it. I'm like, it's a big idea, but is that just for Flash? Is he the only guy who's going to address these things? I don't know.
Well, the Ultraviolet Corps was introduced, I think, in issue one or two of the series.
That's true. What happened with that?
Well, other than here, nothing, unless it's going on in the current Green Lantern title that I dropped.
Until you mentioned that, I forgot about it because that was the last time we read it, and that was probably 2 years ago or 2.5 years ago.
We'd actually talked, I think, Justice
League. Oh, no, I can't remember.
A couple of months back or whatever. But
wasn't 2 years ago. It was a year ago.
A year or so ago, yeah.
But it's like, good Lord. It's like, I mean, so he comes out with cool stuff, but I don't know if it's going anywhere. And that's why I'm like, I feel like it's building up to something, but I want to see that something happen.
Well, and that's the difference between this world building and like Geoff Johns with Green Lantern and such when he introduced the different cores. Because it got to where almost every one of those had their own title for a bit.
Oh, and here, it's kind of like he comes out with something like the Ultraviolet Lanterns, and nobody picks it up. I don't know if that's because they switched to Morrison on Green Lantern, and maybe the old writer, Venditti, would have written about it, but it just seemed to go nowhere. I was like, but those forces have sure taken over the Flash book.
Yeah. Well, and Venditti had some time on Green Lanterns or whatever to do it. And either chose not to or just wasn't allowed to. Or I don't know.
Yeah, maybe he's like, yeah, this doesn't interest me and I'm finishing anyway. So, all right, enjoy.
But you look at the number of ideas that have been kind of dropped in this series and such and compare that again to the various colored lanterns where Larfleeze got his own book for a while. Red Lanterns had their own book. Sinestro Corps had their own book. And there are a few other things that were focusing on some of the other characters. That, you know, it wasn't just, hey, there are these other colors, and we forget about them.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know what to think of it, but he has me hooked because I take my time and focus on this book because I know it's something big. I just don't know what the something is yet.
It's the not knowing what the something is yet that kind of gnaws at me a little.
It does. It's weird. It irritates me, but at the same time, it keeps me hooked, and I can't stop reading it. So I've been enjoying the book, but I would say it's so inaccessible, but I love it.
Now, one question I've got for you. There was one page here where
Okay. It
kind of got almost a little too meta for me.
Which page?
Kind of bumped me out of the story. It's a full page splash. It's right around the halfway point where we get the Starman and stuff from, I don't know, the 80s or 90s. I love that character, so glad to have him back.
Okay.
We're on Earth. We do the page flip, and we find out kind of what's going on there. And the art, particularly near the bottom, is trying to reinforce the point of unimagining everything in existence.
Yeah, okay, I know exactly what you're talking about. I didn't know if that was something completely new. I'm like, but yeah, that was weird to me.
If you're going to unimagine everything completely in existence, okay, you've got to have a visual for that, and that's not going to be easy, I get it. But going from fully, you know, done comic art to inked to pencils to blue line to a pencil that's actually crumbling away.
Someone's taking a bite out of it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was weird.
It's a little meta.
Yeah, that was very odd. Yeah, at the same time, I kind of enjoyed it, but they kind of take you out of the comic because it's like, you know, you're reading a comic book. We're taking you out of the comic book. It's gone.
It would be like, oh, if this were a movie or TV show and they had this line of, oh, I'll imagine everything, and you pull back and you see the camera crew and the lights and all that, and you pull further back and you're outside the studio or something, and it's crumbling down, it's like, well, that's kind of weird.
Yeah, that's a weird feeling. So very, very odd. I mean, we're getting so many weird things in here because if I'm not mistaken, you know, okay, I can't say his name, whatever that guy's name is, Mitzelplick the imp.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, he's like a fifth dimensional imp, correct?
Yes.
Now we have a sixth dimension.
Of course, because you've got to one-up everything.
I know, which I was like, okay, I don't know what the sixth dimension is, but it's more powerful. And that part in the, I think that was the last issue, it started getting really weird for me. I'm like, oh my gosh, he has so many crazy ideas, but it seems like one-up. Okay, we're going to ultraviolet light you, so, you know, something you can't see. We're going to do a sixth dimension. Now the next writer's going to do a seventh. I don't know, but it's very weird.
And they're not bad ideas. I actually like many of the ideas.
Yeah, me too. I don't want to say that wrong. It's interesting, but I don't know if they're going anywhere.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're going anywhere, and it's busy with ideas.
Yes, because so many times I'm reading this, and then I'll be like you mentioned the ultraviolet thing. I forgot about that because it's not talked about, and it's been a few months, you know, or it could be in, you know, 6 months ago that we talked about that. But, you know, the sixth dimension, I'm not sure that a year from now, any woman will have done anything with that, with what's going on.
And that's the part that frustrates me.
Yeah. So it's weird. It's frustration. Yet at the same time, I like the big ideas. And I don't know how to, you know, how to grade that.
Yeah. For me, there were a couple other things with this that made it a little hard to grade because it's chapter three. Presumably, I don't know, like six maybe?
Yeah.
So it ends on a reveal slash cliffhanger thing, and it's like, well, it's halfway through the story maybe. It's like, yeah, I kind of figured it was gonna. But it makes a little bit of this issue feel a little inconclusive and unsatisfying in that respect, even though there was a lot going on here.
Oh, a ton going on. And based on a decision that was made on here, it got really dark.
Yeah.
Here at the end. I was just like, man, this is very weird, and I am very interested. I have to see it out. I have to see where he goes. So it's weird. I'm not satisfied, yet I'm hooked.
Yeah. Well, it's a good roller coaster ride. The question is, can it land the ending?
That is going to be the key. And if he doesn't stick the ending, this could end up being the most useless, worst run. You're like, oh my gosh, all these crazy ideas, and no one did anything with it. Or if he sticks the landing and something happens, and it could have an impact that shakes the DCU, and we might be like, this wasn't a pivotal moment.
Yeah, it could be that this was all setting the seeds for what the DCU is going to look like in 2020 or something like that, if people had only known.
Yeah, so I'm enjoying it. And another thing in here, I really like the art in here. I think the art is gorgeous, beautiful, the line work, the coloring. There's only one picture I really did not like, which just seemed so weird. If you go like about, I think it's right before there's an advertisement in here for this Under the Moon, A Catwoman's Tale, about three quarters of the way through the book. It's in purple.
Uh-huh.
And the page right before that, the Wonder Woman face that you see in there, it looks like an anime character.
There were a couple of places with the art that it felt a little anime-ish. In other places, it felt a little looser or more kind of stylized than I tend to care for.
Yeah, and it's weird because he would go in and out of it, because he would go to super realistic, and then it would get a little anime. It's like, it was kind of bizarre. Like, this panel is like, even the lines and stuff, I was like, wow, that seems like something I would see in manga.
Yeah.
And I was just like, that's weird.
There's a definite manga influence, and some of the art feels, I don't know, it's weird. And there's even some stuff like with the way the Flash costume is being drawn in some of the panels, where there's the red lightning bolt on the cowl and stuff and on the chest, that it's like, are they normally there? Maybe
yeah.
They are, and I just don't notice them in the Flash book.
Yeah, and I'm not detailed enough to even know if it's in the right spot. But I know what you mean, though. He goes in and out of super realistic to anime and to... But overall, I really like this artist. I think he's doing a great job, and it's kind of like the story. The story, it's like, I love it, yet I'm perplexed by it. The art, I love it, yet there's some perplexing things.
For me, the art told the story and was good. It was just not a style I would gravitate towards.
Yeah, I understand that. I can understand it. And as I read it, that one panel just kept sticking out like a sore thumb to me.
Yeah, well, you could have almost convinced me that different people had done the layouts or whatever, the breakdowns of the individual characters.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know, I don't think, obviously it's not the case, but it's like the Batman character looks just generally of almost a different style than Wonder Woman.
Yeah, yeah. So very true. So I am so interested. I want to see what happens with Superman in here. I want to see what happens with our fifth dimensional imp in here. I want to see if anything happens with this new character, the World Forger. And I want to see, based on that last panel, what in the heck is going on?
If something doesn't happen with the World Forger, if we don't get payoff on that, I think they overplayed their hand.
Yeah, and I'll be like, okay, you came up with a lot of great ideas, and you affected the Flash book. Congratulations.
Yeah. Overall, I thought it was a good issue. It's certainly a title to be paying attention to if you're into the big picture DC Universe stuff, so I'm going to go with a solid B on this.
Okay. I liked it more than you, and I think it's because I'm so excited for something to happen. I went with a B+. I almost gave it an A-, believe it or not, but then I looked at the art and I was like, no, there's too many things that aren't happening, but it should be happening. So B+, and warning to the readers out there, this is not accessible. You have to read from issue 1 or you're not going to know what's going on.
Yeah, we're only at issue 21, though.
Yeah, so you only have to read 20 issues.
That's a pretty big ask, I think.
Yeah, you need to read the first 20 issues, and poor Percy's had to read the 20 issues to understand what was going on in Justice League Odyssey. Poor guy.
Yeah, rough life.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our Marvel book?
Yes, this one will be interesting.
This is Major X number 1 by Rob Liefeld.
Yeah.
He did the writing, he did this pencils, he even did some of the inks, although he had some help on that. So this is very much his vision, right, wrong, or indifferent.
Yep.
I'm not going to say I'm the biggest Rob Liefeld fan. He's done some interesting stuff over the years, created some noteworthy characters.
Yep.
He's also sometimes got a reputation for not being the best of artists.
Yes, yes, he does.
You know, where the proportions are totally out of whack, or doors are moving from wall to wall within a scene. He's an easy-to-lampoon artist. Now, that yeah. Having been said, I've actually seen him, I think it was at San Diego Comic-Con one time,
okay.
And he was drawing this beautiful rendition of The Warlord.
Ah, cool.
And just, he was taking his time, it was tight, it was clean, it was really nice. He's got it in him, and sometimes that makes it to the page. Other times, it's just he's like just throwing it out, I think, maybe a little too quick.
Yeah, yeah. This felt very like Rob Liefeld in the 90s to me. And when I say that, like, not good or bad, it's a taste that you acquire, I would say. But when I was a kid, I loved Rob Liefeld. I loved him back in the 90s. His guys were always, you know, super muscular and, you know, over the top drawn, and this is a character that's very similar to that. But like you said, I go back and I look at that, and he wasn't the best artist. He's a good artist, but he has a lot of weird quirks, and his writing was not always my favorite.
Yeah.
Yeah, I go back and read it, and it did not age well.
Well, and this is very much a 90s style thing. It's even taking place in that era of the Marvel Universe.
Yes, very much so.
With X-Force, it's really right around the time, you know, he made his biggest impression there with Deadpool, with Cable, with X-Force and stuff like that, right before going off to Image.
Yeah, it's almost like he's picking up right there, yeah.
And I'll admit, I was intrigued by the whole concept of this Major X character. And it has some cool ideas. I'll admit I was a little worried when we got to the second scene and I noticed the Traveler's log entries were seeming to be numbered backwards.
Yeah.
And I'm like, are we telling the story in chunks moving backwards? It turns out not to be the case. It was just a flashback to his previous entry and then back to the current time. It's like, yeah, whatever. And man, there are a ton of captions here.
So many captions. There's a lot of stuff in here.
I think the entire second... Not the entire second entry, but a good number of pages from that second entry were almost all captions.
Yeah, so that kind of took me out of the story a little bit. And then I was reading it, and it's kind of like you said, it's an X-Force's greatest hits. You know, the big characters show up. I mean, you get Wolverine as well, as long as some X-Force stuff. And then you get a reveal of the new character at the end. They tell you kind of who he is. And some people may like that, some people may not, but there he is.
I thought it was interesting. I'm curious where they go with it.
Me too. And it reminded me of another take that the X-Men have had on another character.
Yeah, yeah. When we got to the point where he was doing that warp jump or whatever it was, and we see some faces.
Yeah.
How much Youngblood have you read?
I read a lot of Youngblood. I probably read the first 3-4 years when he printed it and it came out, but I haven't read it in years.
Did this group of 10 characters look more like X-Men or Youngblood?
It does look Youngbloodish now that you mention it. Yes, it does.
I'm like, okay, that's not too surprising.
Yeah. So, he's going back to the well. He's going back to what he knows. So he's created a new character, yet not created a new character. So it's kind of cool. I like it, but at the same time, now the story was all over the place. And once again, his story did not hook me in this book. Did it hook you?
It was being dumped out by the bucketful.
Yeah, there was too much. I was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh.
Well, it was too much, and so much of it was almost expository.
Yes, and I think that's what it made it a little bit of a slog in certain parts to just, okay, I got to muscle through this, okay. And when I went back to reread it, I was like, oh, I got to read this again, okay. But, I mean, there's cool fight scenes. It was nice to see his art. It's nice to see him in the Marvel Universe. I like to see Rob there. And I'm glad that there's no ill will between him and Marvel. You know, I don't think you'll ever see a Todd McFarlane. He wouldn't want to go that way. And I don't think Marvel ever wants him to come back.
Which is a shame.
Yeah, it is a shame. But it's nice that you can see some of the creators are willing to, you know, just say, hey, you have a gig for me? Yeah, I have something fun. Let's do this. Mm-hmm. And I enjoy that he's not too proud and Marvel's not holding hard feelings. I like that.
Yeah, no, I think that's good.
Me too.
And he even creates a few new characters here, new being a relative term. I'm not going to say Dreadpool is the most unique of characters.
Yes, but they are new.
But this is one of those that I took it as a kind of a modern take on a very 1990s sort of story.
Yeah, and it did bring back nostalgia from that time.
And it felt as much like an Extreme Comics kind of an issue as an X-Men kind of an issue, and an X-Men of that era.
I agree wholeheartedly. This is so 90s. It's so extreme. It's so much of that. So if you are a fan of that stuff, you'll probably like this because it's going to tickle the nostalgia button for you and take you back to that time frame. At that same time, there's a lot of words in here. There's a lot of exposition. There's a lot of just – it's an info dump.
Yes. The one thing there's not a lot of is backgrounds.
Yes, not a lot of backgrounds, which it was kind of weird at certain times because it zooms in on the characters. You can see the characters. But like you said, like the fight scene when you first see Wolverine fighting with Major X in there, you know, they kind of scrap a little bit. They're kind of just floating in white space. So you have a lot of that stuff that's going on in there.
But again, it's standard Liefeld.
This yeah, is what he's known what he for. That's kind of what he does. So it's you can't complain because you kind of know going into it what you're going to get.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. This is not for everybody.
No, no. I would say this is for fans of Rob Liefeld.
Yes. If you're not a fan of Rob Liefeld, you shouldn't be reading this. If you are, you probably are reading it. It's got a lot of his hallmark style in both the writing and the art, and that's not good or bad. It's just the way it is. I would say this is not his best art, but it's some of his better art.
I would agree with that, and I'd say it's some of his better art, and he seemed like he was having fun.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with it. I'm curious where it goes. There's a couple of aspects here where it's like I'm surprised we hadn't seen one or two of the story points that popped out here before.
Yeah.
Particularly with the reveal of Major X, I'm like, you know, I really hadn't given it any thought as to who it would have been, and it's like, that should have been my guess anyways.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
It does make sense.
It raises some other questions, and it has some parallels to some other stuff, but it works.
Exactly.
So I think he's doing a good job here. I thought it was fun. I'm not going to say it was a great book.
Me neither.
I think the story was all over the place. It had a lot of the almost cliche Rob Liefeld-isms that drive some people nuts. And I think there's a little bit of further explanation needed next issue on that reveal. Which maybe we'll get, maybe we won't. But if you're looking for a good roller coaster ride in the vein of the 1990s Liefeld style of stuff, this is exactly what that is.
Exactly. And just like the Hulk, You get a gray Hank McCoy in here.
What got me with that was the red around the arms.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I was like, what is that?
I couldn't tell what was going on there. It seemed like it was, I don't know if he paints his fur or dyes his fur or what.
Maybe to make him pop. I don't know what he was doing.
It wasn't bad, but it was just a little confusing.
Yeah, definitely a little weird.
So I'm going to go with a C+ on it. It was good, not brilliant, not bad. If you're not into, though, that 90s style and stuff, yeah, not going to work for you.
Yeah, this brought me back a little bit. And at the same time, you know, the 90s was all about the art and not about the substance of the story. And I kind of felt that a little bit here, too. And not a knock on Rob, but I'm glad he's back at Marvel. I think it'll be fun for people who are real big fans of X-Force or fans of Rob himself. But I'm like you. I kind of went with an average book. It didn't really hook me, so C.
I can see that. No pun intended.
Yeah.
Shall we move on to our other book?
Sure, sounds good.
Now, this is, frankly, it's a bit of an odd duck. It is Section Zero, number one, and it is by Image. It's by Carl Kessel and Tom Grumman.
Yep.
And the thing that wasn't in here that I'd really, at the end, wished had been
okay.
was a text piece at the end kind of explaining why we're getting this now.
I was wondering the same thing, because I know the reason why I picked this up is two of the listeners had pointed this book out in the previous spotlight.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, okay, well, I'll check it out. You know, a couple of people are like, hey, you gotta read this book. And it's a remake from the 90s. I guess this book came out in the 90s, and I don't know if it was never finished. I don't know much about it. Was it 90s?
The first three issues came out in 2000.
2000. Okay, 2000. All right.
Which is coincidentally why the story is set back in 2000.
Okay, so it came out in 2000, and did they never finish it? Is that what happened?
They never finished, and I don't know how much of this is a remake or just it is what it was.
Yeah, so I don't know, because I never read that stuff back then, so I never heard of it. So for me, this is completely new.
I read it back then, and that's kind of what influenced my take on this a little bit of I remembered bits and pieces of it, because I read the thing like 20 years ago almost when it came out, but only bits and pieces. But enough that it felt familiar, but if you asked me what was going to happen on the next page, I usually couldn't tell you.
Oh, okay. All right. So familiar, yet it didn't leave an impression where you know the story.
Well, again, 20 years. I've read a few comics in that time.
I know. Our brains are full of material now.
But it worked a little against the story because it was good, but Tom Grummet, he had done a lot of stuff in DC around that time. Great artist. And Carl Kessel's a really good writer. And they're doing their A game here, but from 20 years ago.
Yeah, it felt like a comic from a while back. I mean, and not bad in any way, but it was decent art. It was an interesting story. You know, there's some things in there that you have to suspend belief a little bit. You know, I'm not even just talking about the you know, like the superpowers or the things that happen. That's a cool concept. Mm-hmm. You know, oh, the Loch Ness Monster really exists. You know, we have this special UN team that investigates at Section Zero. But the thing that's weird is like, okay, so you find this weirdo, you know, this kid who has this weird power. You know, there's no questioning, no background check. We're automatically inducting you into our group, and here's everything, and here's how exact. I guess there's no security in this
Actually, he saved them and ran with them.
Yeah, I saved them, but I was like, man, you would think they'd want to like interrogate this guy for a little bit before they open up their arms and be like, you're one of us.
Yeah, but I think once they realized he was just a kid and was in over his head, yeah.
Yeah, I guess I've been watching too much real stuff lately, because I read that and I was like, that seems kind of weird. I wouldn't welcome him with open arms, but overall, this was a good story. It's kind of fun because it's almost like I don't know what I equate it to. Maybe a BPRD type thing.
I was going to say, to me, it's Challengers of the Unknown, Fantastic Four, but a bit more sci-fi bent.
That would be better. That's a better analogy. Yeah,
it's science adventurers.
Like, yep, it's just like that.
I mean, to me, the funniest thing, you were sitting there harping on the kid with the insect stuff.
Yeah.
When, what is it, Doc Challenger, whatever, you know, crashes in through the window in a bikini and boots. Or a swimsuit. Yes. Yeah. A long sleeve swimsuit. You know, whatever.
I saw that and I was like, that's what made me think it was the 90s, because I saw her coming with a swimsuit, a long sleeve swimsuit and knee high boots. I was like, Wow, this is really 90s.
You know, well, and the jacket the other guy's wearing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's what gave me the 90s vibe, but I guess it must be early 2000 or just right at 2000.
Literally, it was 2000.
Okay, all right, so still some 90s vibes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that guy could have walked out of the Avengers mansion with that thing on.
Yeah, exactly.
And again, it's not bad, but it did feel a little dated. It'd be like going into, you know, a Mexican restaurant and getting some really good pasta, or a pasta place and getting really good enchilada or something. It's like, it's not bad, but it's not what I was expecting, sort of. You know, it feels a little out of place in today's market, even though it kind of shouldn't, if you know what I mean.
I know exactly what you mean, because I kind of felt the same way. I felt like I took a trip back, yet at the same time, it is a story that could work now, but they apparently didn't change it. So this is what came out, I guess, 19 years ago, which is a long time ago. And why they came out with it, I don't know. Why they're revisiting, I don't know. I guess it's a story that needs to be finished. Or maybe they're going to finish up this little first arc, and then they're going to warp them forward to modern day and come out with a new property. Who knows?
I have no idea, but that's part of why I was really wanting a text piece at the end of, you know, how much of these three issues were published and done back there? Was there more that was done that just wasn't published? Why is it coming out now, not some earlier point? Is Tom Grummet going to do the art on the later issues?
Yeah.
Because if you go there to the end and they show some of the covers for like issue two or whatever,
yeah,
one of them was by Mark Waringo, who isn't doing covers these days. He's long since passed.
Yeah. So I was like, it's very interesting. George Perez and Mike Waringo, neither one of them are really doing art that much anymore.
Yeah.
Well, one isn't doing it at all, and the other one not very much.
Yeah. Yeah. So I, again, first three issues is from back in the day, which I'm glad to see them come out with.
Yeah.
It just feels a little, why now? And that wasn't answered here.
That's what I was questioning. And I can't remember, because I'm kind of weird. I'll read stuff in previews, like when someone pointed this out, but this must have been, you know, 2 months ago, at least 2.5 months ago when I was looking at this in previews. And, you know, when they pointed out, I probably looked at it, and I was like, okay, I'll try it because there's like two or three people recommending it. It must be good. But I try not to read too much into it. I don't know if they explained why they're doing it. I just don't know. But I don't imagine they did explain why this and why now.
Not that I recall. And I'm trying to remember if this was part of the Guerrilla Comics imprint or whatever over at Image, when some writers and artists and stuff decided, hey, you know, these guys are having success there. Why don't we do the same sort of thing? And that it fell apart pretty quickly just for financial reasons.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, yep. That could be it.
But I could be misremembering as to what was going on with that.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, but I like the concept. I think it's a really cool concept. I think it has the potential to be a really fun book. I just want to see what happens after they reprint the first three issues, because then they either need to have some original material with new artists,
mm-hmm.
maybe a new writer, and maybe it'll be something cool, or this was just a flashback to the past and it doesn't go anywhere. Who knows?
I hope we get more, and I hope it's by the same creative team.
I agree. I would like to see that too. I'd like to see them create what they wanted to create, do what they wanted to do, because nobody can read their minds. We're not going to know what they wanted to create before they went defunct.
But the challenge even with that is, even if they try to pick up where they left off, that was 20 years ago, almost.
Yeah.
They've changed as people.
That's true. I'm like, I've changed so much in 19 or 20 years. You've changed in 20 years. I can't imagine.
The way the concept would be interpreted by today's audience versus, you know, when I was reading it back then is going to be different.
Yeah. Because I'm 45. Going back to my 25-year-old self, I was a completely different person, and I'm sure the way I thought, the way I did things would be completely different then than the way I would do things today.
Well, the reference points you would have for this sort of a story now, you know, modern-day sci-fi on Earth kind of a thing, would include all sorts of Stargate stuff that wasn't around back then,
yep.
The new Doctor Who kind of stuff that wasn't around back then. They're just different kind of touch points that the modern audience have that wasn't influencing these first couple of issues if they're just, you know, cleaned up versions of what was done back in the day.
Exactly. So I would say this is going to be an interesting exercise. And if it goes well, it's something that maybe other creators can revisit. If it goes horribly wrong, it's something I hope nobody ever does again.
I hope it goes well.
Me too.
And I'm curious how much, you know, like the guy who did the colors and stuff, I don't recognize the name.
Me neither. I never heard of that name.
Comicraft and Richard Starking, I mean, they've been around forever, so that doesn't really date this at all. Walter Simonson, Jerry Ordway on the alternate covers for this and stuff date it a little bit. And again, not in a bad way. This was some really good stuff from that era.
Yeah. Do you want to try to mention that colorist name?
Ben?
Good luck with that.
DeMaglui?
Yeah, that sounds better than I would have done.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Last time, I was like, oh, God.
That's not a bad last name. Just horrible to pronounce, at least for me. I'm exactly. Sure he can do it fine.
Yeah, exactly. It sounds like he could be from a different country.
I'm just trying to think, is that somebody who's doing colors today or was doing colors back then?
Yeah, it must have been back then. Who knows? I don't know. I don't know.
It is, kudos for them for still having all the files and everything they need to get this out.
Yeah. So that's something that's needed here. They need to address what in the heck's going on. What are we missing out? Why is it being revisited? What motivated them and got them in the mood? Something must have happened where these guys got together and say, hey, remember that story? We need to write that story because maybe they must have been passionate about it. We need to finish that. We could take it here. And no one just throws out stuff because you imagine, you know, a 20-year-old book, probably not going to make a ton of cash unless it goes somewhere.
Flip side, 20-year-old book you've got done, you get the first three issues for free.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, let's hope it's not just a cash grab.
No, I'm not saying it's a cash grab, but if you've got it to where you need to have the first couple of issues done and stuff to prime the pump, and you've got that, and you can just hit the runway with that issue 4 or something, it's not a bad spot for the creative team to be in.
It's true. They're way ahead, so they could basically launch the book while they're working on issues 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah.
Which is kind of cool. I'm actually excited to see where it goes because although I wouldn't say this is an amazing comic, it did catch me a little bit. When I read it, I was like, okay, all right, this is kind of a cool concept, and if they do it well, it can be really good.
I enjoyed it, but a lot of it is I like Carl Kessel's writing, and I love Tom Grummet's art.
Yeah, so if you like that, you're going to love it.
Yeah, so it's a cool concept. What didn't work as well for me is the fact that I had read it, so it failed to be able to surprise me in some respects.
Understand.
So, but it wasn't like so predictable because I remembered it all. It was a weird spot for it to be in there.
Yeah. And for me, I'm a first time reader.
I'm going to go with a B on this. I thought it was solid. I think it's definitely worth checking out. I don't think it'll disappoint, unless they get only 3 issues and then kill it.
Yeah.
At which point I'll be irate.
Yeah, exactly.
And reserve the right to lower the rating.
Yes. Well, I liked it, and I just went with a little bit lower grade than you. I went with a B minus. I would say it's good. It's not the best book, but it's definitely worthwhile. I'm going to see it through to probably a 6-issue arc beyond. I don't know how long this is even going to go for.
I'm not sure how long it'll go for, and I really think this is one where, I mean, normally the 4th issue is kind of pivotal because that's when the ordering blind is kind of gone and retailers can actually order based on how it's been selling.
Yeah.
Here, though, it's funny because that almost kicks it back into that honeymoon period because it's the modern version of these creators hopefully taking over the book.
Exactly. So it's going to be really cool.
It's a pivotal issue for it at number 4, and I hope they keep it going and do well with this.
Yeah, and so I guess now is the 4th one being solicited or is it the 3rd one? It must be the 4th.
I would think the 4th. I didn't think to check.
Me neither. And I actually have my preview sitting right here. I'm going to open it up and just see if it's the same people, if I can find it.
It's got to be. It's a creator-owned book.
Yeah. I'm just wanting to see, you know, like, colors, if they have anything in there. But, oh, no, it's showing 3 of 6 in the latest previews.
Because this was a February 1, so you're looking at the April?
Yeah, I'm looking at the April previews.
Yeah. It's next month that we'll get the next previews. We'll have the new one.
Yeah, so right now it's all the same stuff, and the covers are Dave Gibbons and Tom Grummet.
Cool. We'll see where they go.
All right, definitely. All right, so I had some interesting information for you, but I didn't know if you wanted to talk about your Power Morphicon first.
We can talk a little about that. I've got a whole episode that will have gone up before this episode, provided I finish recording it and editing it. Short story, small convention. I posted some stuff on Slack. Had a great time. Bought a few things. I'll get more into that in the episode my sister and I are doing. But it's one of those that we've talked, my sister and I, a lot of times about how there's different levels of convention. There's like San Diego, there's more regional ones, and there's more kind of small city ones.
Yeah.
This was very much in that small city kind of one. Pasadena, Texas, not large.
Oh, yeah.
The Pasadena Convention Center, not large. Literally at one point, I could see the entire convention from where I was.
Yeah, it looked like you were in some stadium seats when you took a picture of the floor.
It was bleachers.
Bleachers, yeah, bleacher seats. And I was looking, I was like, is the whole convention on a basketball court? I was just wondering. I was like, huh.
More or less, it was the size of a basketball court kind of, you know, setup. I actually looked for basketball hoops and they didn't have them. Maybe they did them well.
Yeah.
But it was fun. It was good. It's to me, it's a perfect kind of a starter convention.
Cool.
And that sort of size thing. It's not overwhelming. There were a lot of kids. Everybody seemed to have a really good time.
Well, I'm glad you had fun. Well, some things that recently happened. Well, one thing I didn't know. Were you a fan of Joe Books?
I've picked a few things up from them, but not a whole lot.
Well, today it was actually a news piece I saw online. They filed for bankruptcy today.
I saw that. I was surprised by that. And I'm not sure exactly what led to that happening.
Me too, because for a while there, they were printing a lot of, like, I think they were doing some Disney properties, and they were doing a lot of different things. But it seemed like they were on the up and up. And, I mean, they were coming up. They were doing well, and then they just completely imploded. I don't know if it's losing a license or what, but they're gone.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And it's a shame, and hopefully no creators were kind of, you know, left in the lurch unpaid or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm hoping too. Because, you know, when we've been talking, you know, how it's kind of like a tough market, I was like, it kind of seems like we're seeing the first signs of stuff with the publishers. Because you had Joe Books, and then you have IDW looking to sell right now.
Yeah.
And that's another interesting one, because IDW is kind of supposedly or apparently the go-to for all of the licensed material.
It's definitely, I think, where a lot of the licensed stuff lands and is a good place for it to land because they do well with it.
Exactly. So that's why I was curious. I'm like, it seems like they do well. It seems like they make money doing it. And I don't know if they're setting themselves up just to be purchased and, you know, maybe it's a great time. They figure, you know, price-wise with their stocks and stuff, this is the way they can make a ton of money. Or if it's signs of trouble. I just don't know.
I wasn't seeing it as signs of trouble, but a cash infusion sounded like it would help on the TV production side from what Sam had been telling me. And there's enough interest in comic properties now, I don't see that necessarily escalating higher than it is, that it's not a bad time to shop around a company like IDW.
Ah, so it's just probably a good time. Well, and, you know, Valiant, they've been trying to do stuff with their, you know, movies. I guess Bloodshot, where they were looking at doing it the first property that they're going to roll out is a movie. And I know they have Chinese investment that came in, but that seemed to have gone nowhere so far.
I thought Vin Diesel had already been shooting the movie.
Have they? Oh, see, I'm out of the loop
on that. I thought he'd at least been attached to it.
All right, you're giving me news. You're making me happy here, John.
I'm doing this secondhand, and my source was actually from Power Morphicon Express, because Jason David Frank had played Bloodshot in the Valiant versus Ninjak versus the Valiant Universe web series that Bat and the Sun did. Jason David Frank, original Green Ranger, White Ranger, yada yada, is done some stuff with Bat and the Sun for the Superhero Beatdown and whatnot. So he played Bloodshot there, and he was mentioning, of course, name dropping, that he had done that you know, Vin Diesel has taken over the role for the movie and stuff.
Well, that'll be really cool, because that's the first I heard of it. So awesome.
So, but it has been a while since the announcement a year or two back that they'd gotten the investment and were doing the movies and such, and we haven't really heard a whole lot. Hopefully we'll actually see something, and it won't be like when, I guess it was it CrossGen that was going to do, who had Way of the Rat? I think that was CrossGen.
I think it was CrossGen, yeah.
That was going to be a movie, as was some other stuff, and of course it just never panned out.
Okay. All right. Well, that made my day, because I was wondering whatever happened with that. Because, you know, I knew they got the investment and they were doing some things. They laid off some of their executives, and then I just hadn't heard anything. So, and actually, I could see Vin Diesel doing a very good job with that.
Could be a lot of fun. Hopefully, yeah. It's true.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I'm keeping my fingers crossed. So now, have you had a chance to see any of the movies that are out in the theater right now? Because right now we have Captain Marvel and the other Captain Marvel, also known as Shazam.
I have not. I haven't even gotten around to seeing the movies that I have on Blu-ray.
So you're going to probably buying them then, watching them at home.
I'm hoping that I don't know, because it really depends on a couple of things. I want to watch Ant-Man and Wasp and then see if my sister and I can find time to go see Captain Marvel in the movie theater so we're ready for Endgame. But I don't know that that's going to happen.
Yeah, my wife and I, we went and saw Captain Marvel, and we were debating seeing Shazam. She's like, I don't know anything about that one. I don't want to watch it. She's like, maybe we just wait till it comes on HBO or Showtime or whatever channel it comes on. So I'm trying to convince her to go right now.
Yeah, part of it for my sister and I is just we got behind on watching a lot of stuff. We're catching up on a few things. We've actually been catching up a little on second season Star Trek Discovery.
Oh, okay, cool.
But, you know, hopefully we'll be caught up by the time the finale airs in a week or two, so we can get an episode on that out. But, like, we haven't even started, like, Black Lightning, which has already ended its second season.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of TV shows with your sister, I'm planning on seeing a TV show with my sister this weekend. Is the last season of Game of Thrones.
Cool.
You're not a fan, are you?
Nope, not at all.
Ah, all right. Yeah, it's pretty bloody, but I love it. I love it, love it, love it. I read the books, and then I was so frustrated because he never finished the books, but I'm so looking forward to this. We're actually going to have a party at my house. We're going to have my brother-in-law, my sister, my wife and I, we're getting together. We're all going to watch it.
Cool. Should be fun. Yeah. Should be fun. Hope you enjoy it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, I never got into to Game of Thrones. The most I've seen of Spartacus, which my sister watched and enjoyed, was a panel at Comic-Con, and we were walking by. I said, oh yeah, let's go do this. She drags me in there or whatever. And they're showing the trailer for the season or whatever. And there's literally, it's like they're just tossing buckets of blood, fake blood at the camera. I swear.
Spartacus is way worse.
It was so much that they actually commented at one point during the panel that they had run out of fake blood. They did not think that was possible.
I will tell you, I've seen both series. Spartacus is way more sex and way more violence and way more over the top blood than Game of Thrones by far.
Just not for me.
Yeah, understandable. Well, but for you Game of Thrones fans, we'll talk about it on the Slack channel. I'm looking forward to it this weekend.
Cool. Well, like I said, hope you have fun with that. That's great.
Thank you.
But yeah, I've got so many TV shows and movies that I wish I had the time to watch all of that and get some more episodes out on those too.
Definitely. So, and now, are you making any headway on the comics, or you were gone for the weekend? You're probably a little bit behind.
I got 3 comics read this week.
3 comics, and the ones we're reviewing, right?
Yeah, that's exactly what they were.
Well, hopefully you get some headway this weekend and get some stuff done. But actually, with the slowdown in your purchasing, you should get caught up pretty quick.
I'm at the point where I've got, let's see, 72 comics to read at the moment or thereabouts, with some more coming, and another 22 in the next shipment, plus a couple of things I'd asked Eric when I was down at the shop to see if he could get me that I think will be coming in.
So that's not bad at all. You could actually, if I wouldn't recommend it, but you could kill that in a weekend if you really pushed.
I could. It's not likely to be this weekend because as we're recording this on the 9th, tomorrow I'm hoping to actually finish recording the second part of the Power Morphicon Express episode so we can go up Friday.
Okay.
Thursday I'm recording with Sam and Eric on the February comic sales numbers because Friday I think the March ones start coming out. So I'll be spending part of the weekend crunching those numbers, writing that article and such. And there's the teleconference this weekend that will have happened by the time this episode goes up. So I'll have a few things to do this weekend.
It's never ending. You are a busy man, John.
I am. I'm hoping to get a weekend off soon.
Yeah, you need a weekend off. You need a weekend of doing nothing except reading, maybe watching some TV shows, just having fun.
I'm hoping that'll be the weekend after, which will be Easter weekend and stuff. Watch some TV with my sister, go have a nice Easter lunch or whatever with her and my mom, and chill out.
That should be fun. Well, I hope you have a very restful Easter, but this weekend, good luck with the numbers and all that stuff.
Should be good. Hopefully there's some interesting stuff to talk about. It's always easier to do the article when there's something that jumps out of, this needs to be discussed, versus, yeah, sales are down again, or something like that.
Like, wow, new number ones and everything else is down. All right, we're done.
Yeah.
Well, it tends to happen a bit.
It's funny, because one thing I noticed, and let me see if I can pull up the note. Yeah, I've got it right here. I'd done a little digging. One of the things I've been collecting off the Diamond website is the product change and shipping update stuff, but I haven't really integrated that into my number crunching yet. Haven't found a good way to do it. But I was noticing, and it got really bad with Doomsday Clock number 10.
Okay.
It was originally supposed to come out on March 27th, got pushed to April 3rd, then pushed to April 10th, then pushed to April 17th, then pushed to April 24th, to May 1st, now to May 8th.
To be pushed yet again.
Probably.
I don't even remember what's going on. I don't.
But that's one where, man, the delays are killing it.
It is, because I think there was something there. I can't even remember, but they're spaced out so far. I literally can't remember from issue to issue what was going on.
Well, one of the things I talked with Eric and James about when I did the retailer spotlight with them was just how different the comic publishing stuff is between when Doomsday Clock started and whenever it may end.
Oh, yeah?
I mean, what titles were going on at DC back then? So it may be fun to either with them or with you or somebody to do a kind of a throwback episode of just reminding people where the DC universe was at when it kicked off.
Yeah, that would be hilarious.
I think doing that along with a back issue spotlight on the other 11 issues.
And you'd be like, wow, that took forever to come out.
I really hope they land the ending on that, but I am increasingly uncertain how they possibly could.
Well, it's almost like I think they were building up to an event with it, or I mean, it is an event, but something, you know, impactful. But things are moving along so quickly that they can't ever impact the rest of the universe because it's moved on.
Well, the whole idea was that they were timing other things to all kind of coincide when Doomsday Clock ended its 1 year run.
And it never happened.
No.
Yeah, kind of sad.
I mean, it's getting to the point where it will have been about a year between issues 5 and 10 of Doomsday Clock.
Yeah. And if they don't stick the landing with this, there's not going to be a huge market for collected editions in it. And then it's like, okay, you built this great story. You kept the same artist on it, basically to bring, you know, an evergreen property to their back catalog. But if it's not evergreen because they don't stick the landing, what was the point?
I think it'll do okay because a lot of people are seeing it as a sequel to Watchmen.
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I've just been so disappointed because I've given up hope of remembering what's going on. And I just kind of read it and I'm like, oh, that was a cool issue. Don't know how it's going to go. I'll check it again in 3 or 4 months when the next issue comes out.
I guess the other question I'll throw out for the listeners to weigh in on is, in addition to possibly doing a back issue spotlight on Doomsday Clock itself, would there be any interest or any point in doing one maybe the week before that had DC Universe Rebirth, The Button, The Price, The Oz Effect, the stuff that kind of were the meta arc stuff leading into it, maybe?
Yeah. Yeah, let us know. Either on the Slack channel or the forums, let us know what you guys think.
Both should it be done and what should it include if we do?
Yeah, I agree.
So, because it'd be interesting to do.
I think it would be interesting. So, when did the first issue even come out? Do you remember?
I think it was 1995. No, I'm kidding.
Best response ever.
I don't remember.
I can't remember. I'm like, I don't know. But it's been like excruciating. It's been kind of painful.
Well, let me see, because it would have been, did we review it? Is the question? Drew and I did, and it was November 22nd, 2017.
Wow.
So Thanksgiving 2017.
Thanksgiving 2017.
Thereabouts.
Wow. Maybe we'll get the last issue Thanksgiving 2019.
Or 2020.
Or 2020. Yeah, they may push it.
They've pushed issue 10 like 6 times. They've pushed issue 9 like 5 times.
The thing is, I can't understand why it has to keep getting pushed week by week by week by week. I'm like, is it the artist? Is it the right? It's got to be the artist. I'm like, are they just like, is he telling them, oh, I'll have it done next week. I'll have it done next week. I'll have it done next. I mean, what? That's crazy.
I don't know.
It's very weird. Very weird.
It seems to me that while I get why they don't do this, it would not be a crazy idea for a creator to expect the publisher to have money in the bank to pay them when they say, hey, do you want to do this job? Or when you sign the contract or whatever. And that the publisher actually have the book in hand pretty much ready to go when they solicit it.
I think that would be awesome. It'd be like a regular book deal, you know? You get a front, you know?
I'm not saying in advance.
An advance on the money. Well, I mean, but they could basically fund him. They could have funded him way back in 2015 and 2016 to create this thing to come out in 2018. And, you know, thinking ahead, okay, well, let's have this big event in 2018 that's going to happen, or 2019. What, you pick the year. And they could have had this guy who's slow as a snail drawing it for 2 years, and maybe some help, you know, with the inking, some help with this, or maybe somebody to help with some of the more difficult panels just to push it along.
What I would do with that kind of an approach is I would do an event book that mainly featured as the key characters the B-list characters, the ones that don't have ongoing titles or whatnot.
Yeah.
Have the regular A-list ones involved, but in a way that their involvement is in their own titles.
Yes. So where that someone else can write that and do that.
You can basically say, this is what's going to have to happen plot-wise with Superman or Batman or whomever, but then get it to where you've got the entire kit and caboodle of the whole, you know, 9, 12 issue run, whatever, done, that as long as you've kind of gotten these characters off stage, if you will, for the duration, you don't have to worry about them getting killed, changed, or whatever. And you just tell people, hey, you can't use this character for a while.
You can't use Booster Gold or Blue Beetle because they're over here doing this thing.
Or Firestorm, or prior to him having he's in the Justice League, I was going to say Martian Manhunter, or, you know, some of these other characters, there's a ton of them that would be big enough to headline a series in mass, much like they did with 52 and stuff.
Yep.
And then get it to where the whole thing can literally come out like clockwork.
Heck, there was no, up until they launched a Shazam title for the movie a little while back, they could have been using Black Adam in there, you know, because he wasn't around anywhere.
I could have used Shazam. He could have been
Shazam,
kind of,
yeah.
If you had the ones that if you were to look at them and say, you know what? They actually could be a legitimate lineup for the Justice League.
Yeah,
Shazam
there you
in place
go.
Of Superman, somebody in place of Batman, or, you know, whatever.
Yeah, you have those characters in there, and they're having a big, impactful story that when it finishes, they know what's going to be going on with the main characters without impacting the main universe.
Yeah.
So we shall see. It remains to be seen. And how far it gets pushed, we should start like a pool. A betting pool. We all throw in a dollar and somebody gets a pot if they guess, whoever guesses closest.
I would be curious what people's guess is as to when Doomsday Clock 12 may actually come out, and if it actually ends the thing or just leads into something else.
Yeah. Also, that's another thing that should be posted in the Slack channel or on the forums. Give us your best guesses of when Doomsday Clock will end.
Yeah. Yeah. So let's see. We've got the next previews coming out, I believe, on April 24th.
Yep.
That puts the next preview spotlight deadline on May 5th. Regular format, one clip per pick. We had a ton of picks this last time. It was awesome. It's about a 2 hour and 15 minute maybe episode.
Cool.
And I didn't even ramble too much at the end. It's all you guys, which is awesome. And then the next teleconference after that will be May 11th, 7 p.m. Central Time. We'll have information on the forum and such. And, of course, between us recording this and it going up, we will have had the April teleconference. So hopefully that was fun.
Cool. I hope so.
So anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
That pretty much does it.
Cool. Join us next time as we discuss Flash 68 from DC, Symbiote Spider-Man number 1 from Marvel, and Fair Lady number 1 from Image Comics. The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.